Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, Pete.
We're back with the final, possibly part of One Night Stand 2005. And what a show it has been.
Oh, but we are kicking off with one of the great matches of all time.
It was so good, Mark.
Absolutely no hype. Absolutely all sizzle. Is that an expression?
That's lovely, though.
Good.
Yeah. I'm having that. Let's write that down.
Get into this Mick Foley thing where I just say stuff and it doesn't quite make sense, but it sounds good if you're convicted enough.
Mike Awesome.
Yes.
And Masato Tanaka.
Yeah, did you enjoy?
I did really enjoy it. Mm. Tanaka from Tokyo, Japan. He's actually from Wakayama, which is 4 hours away. So
is it?
There's no reason to...
It's a little bit like when they used to say the British Bulldog was from Leeds.
Yes.
It's only an hour, but it's
unnecessary.
Wrong.
Just so unnecessary. Not that people would know Leeds.
No.
Blackpool. Was he from Blackpool?
Any better. Yeah, he was from Goulburn in Lancashire.
Lancashire.
Mike Awesome was, in the 90s, really seen as just... He had the right look. He was a big guy, 6'7". 290 pounds, and he had a remarkable ability to be that size and do the moves in the ring that the cruiserweights were doing.
Right.
At a time when big men were not doing those moves. We've seen, like, The Undertaker in WrestleManias. He now sort of, you know, jumps over the top rope to the outside. But really, until Mike Awesome did that, there were no big people doing those sorts of moves.
Because their knees would explode.
Well, they were just too big to do it. It would be like throwing a cow off a motorway bridge. It's just a terrible idea. What he also had was he was not very good on the mic, and he had a sort of sad, gentle face. He didn't really look like a monster. He looked pensive and slightly sort of... not simple, but just bored. I mean, he lacked that sort of, you know, monster element. Mm. He was in Japan working in FMW, which was a sort of a very aggressive, strong style, but also quite like ECW, novelty matches and violence. And he came over to ECW. They very, very quickly realised he was going to be a big star. He was just good. Mm. He was good. And the ECW didn't really have monsters. It had people who were characters, and it had people who were too small for the big federations.
Yeah.
And it had people who were strange proportions, your Blue Meanies, your Axel Rottens, people who were willing to go the extra mile. What they didn't have was imposing physical specimens. And Mike Awesome was that. He very, very quickly won the ECW championship. Mm. And then, while he had that belt, he was signed by WCW, and he left. And they never, ever forgave him in ECW. Mm. Joey Styles, in this match, when he comes in, he's like, here he is, the Judas. The Judas.
Right.
He says a line, which is really unfortunate, where at one point Mike Awesome does a suicide dive, and he says, I wish he had killed himself on it. Sadly, Mike Awesome did end up committing suicide at the age of 42. The reason why is also heartbreaking, and I'll weave it as we go through.
Right.
So Awesome goes to WCW, ECW are furious about him, and there's an amazing sort of odd little thing in the title lineage. So he's still holding the ECW belt, so they bring him back for one night.
It's a real no-no, isn't it, that kind of thing? Like,
it really
federations
is.
And sacking it off.
The reason is not so much, oh, you're disrespecting this made-up belt. It's because the belt represents a company.
Yeah.
And by just walking out on the company when you're on top, you're actually damaging the company for all the people who make their living from it.
Mm.
And that was really the sort of, you know, the thing that people took against so badly.
Right.
Mike Awesome came back for one night, and he was, by that point, a WCW contracted talent. He lost the belt to Taz, who was a WWE talent who'd been loaned back to ECW, as they wanted someone to beat Mike Awesome really quickly, who the ECW fans knew.
Yeah.
And it would be a nice surprise to see Taz, who they hadn't seen for a while. So they do it that way. And it became the only time that a WCW talent met a WWE talent during the entire sort of wrestling war.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it was for the ECW belt. Just a strange little bit of trivia. He went to WCW and they entirely squandered him. They gave him a gimmick called That 70s Guy, Mike Awesome.
Why do they always give like big guys who like got a really good look?
It was crazy.
The shittest look.
They gave him a Partridge Family bus. That wasn't cheap. And he would drive in and he'd do his matches and everything. And it was just, I mean, from that point on, really, he got the label of just being, oh, he doesn't really get over.
Mm.
You know, he was fine in the small league of ECW,
yeah.
Big Fish, Small Pond. Here,
yeah.
Doesn't really stand out. I was watching some of his 70s guy stuff where he's got sort of flares on and a pastel shirt. And there was one match he had. He actually had the last match that Insane Clown Posse had in WCW. There was a point where WCW had something like 250 people on their roster, 250 yeah. wrestlers, some of whom, like Lanny Poffo, were signed for 4 years and didn't wrestle once. That kind of madness. The whole thing had gone crazy. But they had Insane Clown Posse had quite a long run in WCW as wrestlers.
Okay, right. So they didn't start out as wrestlers. They were the musical act first in the heady days of new
metal. In the match I watched, they were saying, here they are. I mean, they're millionaires from their music career, but they want to be in WCW, and it is madness. But even if you were a millionaire, the amount of money that WCW was throwing at people, they probably were like, well, this can't be turned down.
No, exactly,
I know it's
yeah.
a weird like angular curve. But the match that I was watching was Mike Awesome against Insane Clown Posse.
That's so weird.
And there's a bit where Shaggy 2 Dope is given the Awesome Bomb on top of the Partridge Family bus.
Right.
It's just stranger and stranger. And again, one of those, I mean, I've never been powerbombed on a bus, and after watching this I never will be, but it's he lands on the bomb, and then it just, he slowly, because of the curve of the bus roof, begins to slide off after taking this move, and Mike Awesome grabs for him to try and get him, and all that does is it pivots Shaggy 2J and he goes down into the floor like a dart, and it's just, it's a horrible thing. There's no movement at all.
All right, jugglers.
Oh. Fuck this
on?
Shit. And, anyway, so Mike Awesome has had this checkered career. He's come to WCW in 2001 as part of the Invasion, becomes the first invader to hold the WWE title. He wins, I think, the Hardcore belt. But he got injured, and then he was sacked the following year, really.
Right.
He was really delighted that he was sacked. He said, being in the WWE, it sucked. I hated it. You had to kiss everybody's ass. You had to be on your political toes all the time. You wouldn't believe the backstage politics. You were getting stabbed in the back constantly, and I was so happy when I was told I was gone. So he comes back. You know, the WWE superstars have turned their back on him as a Judas. And you can see, oddly, with his sad, melancholy face, he's a bit like, oh, you know, I can't believe that everyone's treating me like this. This is really sad. The thing that's sweet about him is he had, like, the same girlfriend for 21 years. They met at high school, they had kids together. And
so
he was just
rare.
Obviously this nice-hearted man who really wasn't cut out for the cutthroat business that wrestling was. And so what he does, of course, is you go, well, revenge is a dish best served cold. I'm going to have an absolute fucking barnstormer. And he does, with Masato Tanaka, a man he'd had some absolutely classic ECW matches with.
Yeah.
And on that night, the two of them come out, little fanfare. They weren't expected to be the match. I imagine if there had been a match cut for time, it would have been that one.
Yeah.
And they go out and they do one of the most memorable matches in WWE pay-per-view history. It is everything that ECW was, which is thrilling and unexpected and violent and
awesome,
unbelievable. It's the chair shots. The unprotected head chair shots.
Nobody's putting their hands up.
No.
Tanaka
takes three of the most brutal chair shots in wrestling history. Absolutely. I mean, but the thing is, of course, is once that happens, the crowd are suddenly like,
fuck.
This is now Now, this isn't just a thing where I go, who's going to win? I go, this is believable. I cannot believe what I'm watching, but I want it to continue until one of them cannot... it's just a magic thing. I saw once, I went to RevPro, British Federation, fantastic sort of organisation, and it was in York Hall, and there'd been quite... I don't know what it was. It just wasn't clicking with the crowd, and it had been fairly flat all night, and the matches were just going, and they were... fine, competent, but it wasn't working. And then they brought out Tomohiro Ishii and Keith Lee, two big guys, and they had a match that was like this match in that it was so physical. And from the moment we'd had two moves, the place, it changed the atmosphere in the place entirely. And it just exploded the room. And it's just the right match at the right time on the right night in front of the right crowd. And that is this Masato Tanaka versus Mike Awesome. Awesome later did feel underpaid for the work he'd done.
Right, okay.
He then retired and he became a real estate agent. Lance Storm, he recalled on his website after Mike Awesome's death, he said, I talked to Mike a lot that night and was very happy for him. He seemed really happy and content with his life. He talks about how he enjoyed pushing his daughter on the swing in their backyard, and he combined doing that with doing Hindu squats by doing a squat between each push. I also remember discovering that he'd been happily married longer than I had, which is a rarity in this business. So Mike Awesome had been married to his high school sweetheart since 1991. After she told him he wanted a divorce, that's when he hanged himself in 2007. And it's a sad end to a career that, you know, he never seemed to get that lucky break that he needed. And what a shame. And watching this match, I mean, as a legacy, it's just, I mean, on one of the great pay-per-views all time, to have the match that blew everything else out of the water. Congrats to the two of them.
Yeah, it was a really, really strong performance. Tanaka just takes some fucking hits. Like, there's times I think, how's he getting up from that?
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And do you know what? You're watching you're watching the video of an assault. Mad assault. I think I've said this before, but there's a thing in law that what's it called? Oh God, I shouldn't forget this word. Consent. You shouldn't consent. Right. You are not able to consent to violence of a certain level.
Yes.
So, for example, if I said pull out my tongue and you did, and then I said it was fine, I said he could, they would go, no, you cannot consent to that.
Yeah, well, we can't hear what you're saying, Mark. Mr. Hinn, so you're getting the chair, Donnie.
But I mean, I don't understand quite why Masato Tanaka isn't in prison. Why they haven't gone? You can't consent to that, mate. You've literally broken the law. It's horrible to watch. It's part of wrestling's history.
Yeah,
I enjoyed watching it again very much. It was appalling. Oh, so good. It's absolutely horrible.
It's rare. Those. I mean, but again, like a lot of the time with these shows, like the main event isn't as strong. But I mean, I think in this one, like it probably gets stronger.
Yeah.
as the pay per view gets gets.
It does. You get a great red hot Paul Heyman promo, and it comes at the right time after this unbelievable match. Normally there'd be a dip.
Yeah.
In WWE, they'd have put on a women's match or a cruiserweight. You know, gauntlet thing. Here, Heyman comes out, right time. He hits about five lines, not even very many. Mm. Says, my eyes are red, I've not been crying, I've been having a joint with RVD. And everyone is like, okay, so this is...
ooh, naughty.
This isn't like WWE, where everyone's like, eat your prayers and drink your vitamins. Eat your prayers. New T-shirt.
Eat your prayers. Eat your prayers, Tweedles.
And he does a good sort of, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of ECW. Yeah. They've allowed these guys to, you know, run roughshod over the crowd, and there's Heyman levelling the score. Mm. Hide your wives! It's Edge! It says, I have two words for you. Matt freaking Hardy. Considering everyone else is saying the F word on this and they bleep it out on the network.
Yes.
Why Paul Heyman is like a better self-censor there. That's a shame. But it was really, that was properly exciting. He also says the famous line here with JBL, where he says, on a personal note from all of us to you, since you want to shoot, cowboy, the only reason you were WWE champion for a year is because Triple H didn't want to work Tuesday.
A great line.
A really good line. a literal red-hot zinger. And there's a funny thing about the reactions that the WWE superstars do, because in the sort of world of wrestling, you'd expect them to be going, oh, but they're all going, wah, 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 like, you know, and it made me think, I think you're genuinely annoyed. Yeah. I don't think this is a thing where you're acting annoyed. I think you're acting like you don't care because you're genuinely annoyed. Yeah. It was
He's got nothing to put back and he's like, yeah, it did look a little affected.
Yeah, I think Paul Heyman as well, a very divisive character, certainly right. Less so now than he was back then. But there were people who really saw him as being a shyster and a fraud and he was all about bad checks and things like that. And I think they looked at him and they just went, you know, you are nothing. You are this horrible, shady, sweaty, you know, strange man, and you're not a pro like us. You're not in the same business.
Paul Heyman was roughly my age at this point.
No,
he looks like
he does. The only thing that ruins this is he does look so bad. He looks like Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street,
and
out of a canal.
Well, he's like seen The Matrix and he's bought the worst version of that jacket.
That coat is so big. Where, you might have
big,
found like
thick hoodie.
That
kind
might
of...
have been like a mid-90s. You'd be able to find a coat that was that big. Yeah. Like when I was like sort of like at school, you used to get these really big, long, black, heavy coats, like the ones you'd see in sort of stupid dramas about students.
Yeah,
you know, that student grant type coat that would go down to your ankles, and they were huge. I haven't seen one of those for years. And I looked at Paul Heyman's and I thought, I'll never see that. See a coat that big.
It's like it's what they used to call like trench coat mafia, kind of like that, kind of long.
It doesn't get across just how big it is.
It's just baggy and there's no shape to it.
No, I mean, how much? It's like an acre of material. It's just amazing. He's also got the disgusting like wet ponytail.
I know.
Which it took him far longer than it should have done to get rid of that.
To get rid.
Yeah.
After his hair was like, there was just no hair on the top of his head.
No, he was entirely bald.
Incredible.
And it was a disgusting, long, greasy... Oh, I mean, it was so repulsive.
But somebody wants to grab him and go, look, there are people that look like you without the ponytail. Like, there are people who have got on quite well with the little halo of hair.
Yeah.
Just deal with it.
I mean, the ponytail doesn't make me go, this guy is 22. You know?
Is that a playable character in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater? Because he looks so young and thrusting.
Well... We go from there, which is a great sort of bit of work shooting, which is he does portray that character very well. He's fantastic, Paul Heyman. In the longer his career has gone on, the better he's become.
Yeah,
he's never stopped getting better, and I don't think there's ever been a point where he wasn't really good. I like to think of it as the greasy ponytail on podcasting.
Of wrestling podcasting.
No, not of wrestling podcasting. We are definitely the most hygienic one of those. We get to the main event, which is the Dudley Boys versus Tommy Dreamer and Sandman. We're going to just quickly do a thing here. And oddly, I put up a little thing saying, oh, we're doing One Night Stand.
Oh, right.
And about three people have tweeted me and said... I hope you're going to do the real Sandman thing. They weren't like that. They were very polite.
Yeah, going,
I hope you're going to address the whole Sandman music thing.
Right.
And the entrance of the Sandman in ECW's One Night Stand 2005 is one of the top 10 great entrances of all time because the fans cannot get enough of him and he comes out through the crowd and it seems like an iconic, great moment. Mm. It tops the whole thing.
Yeah.
What's funny is you watch it on the network and it's okay. But that's because I don't know why they do this. Sandman always used to come out to Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Yeah.
It literally is. If you were going, I'm Sandman, I'm looking for a song that I can come out to, you'd sort of go, Sandman entrance. And before you even got to that A in entrance, it would say Enter Sandman. You're like, that would be my theme. I'll have that
one. Okay.
Sandman himself actually found the theme. I love this story. Because... He said, I used to have a surfer gimmick, right? And
so that was the Sandman kind of
wipe I couldn't
out.
Work out why he was called the Sandman, right? Because he doesn't do anything. He's not like you go to sleep and I put the sand in your eyes.
Right.
That's like,
oh, so that came from
Mr. Sandman, whatever it is. And he's just like,
oh,
I'm the Sandman. And you're like, why are you the Sandman? It's never
so
been
it
talked
a, so
about.
So it was a surfer gimmick.
Well... He said, I got the name from a wrestling promoter, he said, when he'd seen a billboard when he was driving to the arena, and it said, Mr. Sandman Beds and Mattresses. And he arrived and he went, you're going to be Mr. Sandman. And Sandman was just like, yeah, sure, whatever. And Mr. Sandman, he was like, so, surfer gimmick. What? None of this adds up. The name is out of nowhere. The gimmick then doesn't relate to it. So he was coming out
to be the water boy.
To something like Little Deuce Coupe by the Beach Boys. And he said, but I was, he said, I was doing a newspaper subscription system whereby people would knock on the door and you'd say, do you want a 13-week subscription to this newspaper? He said, but of course I didn't do that. He said, I had a team of children that would go out and do that. What?
Look at this.
Is this part of your Sandman
building?
What is this? And he said, one of the kids who was like a paper boy, he said, I said, what are you listening to? And he said, I'm listening to this, Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Yeah.
And Sandman was like,
a child.
It all falls into place.
No, actually, no. The reason why I chose that music was not because it was really obvious. It was because one of my child employees was listening to it. Sorry, Mr. Sandman. You need to talk to Mr. A, Inland Revenue. B, Mr. Policeman.
Yeah, so it's really strange. He's called the Sandman for that reason. It's an easy way to remember it. Mattress, surfboard, Beach Boys, child, news agent. Hold on. Simple.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
B. But he comes out in at 2000, One Night Stand 2005, he comes out to Enter Sandman.
Yes.
And the WWE, they were happy for him to come out of that on the pay-per-view when everyone saw it.
Yeah, and then...
And they put it on the network, sign a proper deal with this, for this music thing.
No, it costs too much.
We've seen it with Hulk Hogan and Voodoo Child at one of the WrestleManias, and they've got generic stuff that sounds a bit like it. But this really, really suffers from it not having the original thing, because apart from anything else, the crowd sing every word of it.
Oh, cool!
Managed to find a little clip of it.
So I heard this. So I watched it on the network, apart from the last match, and then I watched it on Daily Motion, so I actually heard Enter Sandman.
Ah.
So I was like, oh, I was surprised that they'd be able to use that, but clearly that is an old pay-per-view version.
Thank God for pirates. But it does. It still stands up.
Joey, they're actually singing the song.
So on the network, they've replaced the music, and yet the people are singing over the top of it.
Yep.
Right.
They've muted the entire crowd. So there's a bit where the music is playing, and they put generic cheering on. And there's one guy in the front, and he just sort of goes, exit light. His mouth moves.
Yeah.
But there's nothing related to the thing, and he just looks like you'd look back and you'd sort of go, I was at One Night Stand, I was in the Sandman's thing. You'd show that to your kids 10 years later, you go, oh, here comes daddy, and you're just like a goldfish going,
off to never land. Dad was a weird kid, wasn't he?
It was really exciting watching him come in, and again, he was sort of like just an entrance. The entrance is great. He smashes a beer can on his head, which he did every night, and he has a fag. I love a wrestler with a fag on. I think it's really good.
Fag, but I don't understand what the... Because obviously, I don't understand what the thing is, the beers and the Sandman. You'd think he'd be more spooky.
He basically had a thing where he was this surfer, as we've established.
Yeah, okay, right.
But he was saying, I was just, you know, what I'd be doing is I'd be sitting in the dressing room smoking and having beer, and then I'd put all that down to go out to the ring. And he said, so I thought, well, why don't I just carry on? Why don't I just be a bit more like me? And he basically does think that the character has a character, which I'm still not convinced about. But he basically says, I'm like one of those... he says, wrestlers are characters, but my character... I like the way he's already sort of saying, I am doing something different from most people. My character, everybody's walked into a bar, seen a guy just like me playing a game of pool, and he wants to play it for money. And when he loses, he wants to begin a fight. You know what I mean? Everyone knows the Sandman.
Yeah, but your name's the Sandman, mate.
Yeah.
Say volleyball, beach volleyball. Don't say pool.
My name is Mr. Beach Volleyball, right? Later, I will just be called Beach Volleyball. What will I be? I'll be a carpenter. It's very confusing. So confusing. He then motorboats two women. Is it motorboat or motorboard?
No.
I would hate to make a faux pas.
You're thinking of waterboarding.
No. What do you do with the lady's boobs?
It's motorboating.
Motorboating.
Yeah. Why is it like that? Oh, because I guess a motorboat would go... Yeah. That's the noise you make.
You can tell who's invented doing that, and that's people who have access to motorboats. Yeah.
Yeah. People in Florida Keys.
Yeah.
Dirtbags. Well, wrestling man.
We'll guard on father's motorboat. That's how posh Americans speak.
Father's motorboat.
Yeah. You Kennedy boys, what are you up to? Etc. But he does that, and actually, that makes JBL. They cut back to him, and JBL is legitimately annoyed by that. Like, you know, how dare you motorboat a woman in front of me?
How dare you objectify a woman? How rude!
Sandman was actually. There is one little story about him, and he was. He is appalling in the ring. And again, I think I mentioned this a few episodes ago. He doesn't seem to do any moves. Right. He just runs in, and he'll either barge into someone, or he'll get knocked over, or he'll hit someone with a kendo stick. He does nothing, absolutely nothing. And I was like, where did this fucking lunatic come from? I can't understand how he
got into it. Yeah.
Turns out he was a huge wrestling fan ever since he was a kid. Since 5 years old, he'd been attending WWF stuff at the Philadelphia Spectrum. And he was saying, he carried on going, and he doesn't quite sort out the ages here, but he talks about he was once very, very drunk, and he saw a load of people carrying to the ring pieces of steel cage for the steel cage match that was taking place next. And he said, back then, security wasn't like it is now. There were just guys in yellow shirts that said security, maybe not even that. But I saw them carrying the pieces of the cage, and so I got right in there with them, and I was carrying the pieces of cage too, and I was drunk. He said, so he was carrying the cage in. And then he said, I ended up just climbing underneath the ring because I always wanted to know if there was a spring underneath it. I climbed under the ring, and I was under the ring for what seemed like an hour. It was probably more like 30 seconds. But I saw the spring. Then here comes Gorilla Monsoon pulling on my ankle. He said, Gorilla is like Hack. I've had that nickname Hack ever since I was 5, 6 years old, as long as I've wanted to be a wrestler. And he knew me as Hack because he'd thrown me out of the building so many times before. So it turns out he is actually a massive wrestling fan. So I was suddenly like, actually, I was going to do a thing about how useless you were.
Yeah.
And now I look at him and I sort of go, I really like you.
He's one of us.
What's the spring? He's the only person who's talked about the spring. He's seen the spring.
So many doinks got caught up in the springs.
Just full
We've
of,
lost
full
so many
of
doinks.
Clown skulls being gently ground to powder every time it's moved. And Dreamer comes out. Tommy Dreamer was largely in charge of putting together the actual card.
Yes.
He'd contacted all the wrestlers.
Right.
And again, he comes out. He's the happiest man on earth. Mm. Another huge wrestling fan who ECW was a way for him to get into an industry at a time when WWE and WCW would not have been interested in him at all. Tommy Dreamer, there's some great stories about him. He was once willing to, I think he pitched a thing where, I think it was The Undertaker, was going to cut off his thumb, legitimately. He was happy to do that in an angle.
Really?
And then I think they began to sort of say, probably not the best idea.
No.
But there was a story that broke a while back where he actually sort of pitched an idea, I think, where he said he'd like to do a WrestleMania where he shot himself in front of Paul Heyman. And he didn't seem to be joking. He seems like a really nice guy. I think he just likes wrestling a lot. Maybe a bit too much.
You can have too much of a good thing.
Yeah. And then you get the match itself happens. The Dudleys, who were signed with WWE, are notably in better shape, really, than everyone else.
Yeah.
And they were great. An ECW tag team that was really, really on fire during their time there. Absolutely, sort of the mixed race element of the team really wound up certain people, and it was a really,
really?
Well handled. They were very, very good in ECW, and they remained good. They are actually, I still think they're quite underrated. The Dudleys. Mm. You think of TLC and things, and you think of Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys, and you always forget the Dudleys are there to some degree. But they're a really, really good tag team. One of the greats.
I think the best TLC match I've seen involved there.
Yes, they were very good. And then there's all the sort of ECW tricks. You get the cheese grater, and you get a lot
it
of comes blood
out very quickly.
It does.
The old cheese grater.
I was looking at that, and what, of course, they do is you get the cheese grater on the wide one, and then you push it down so there's no blades, because obviously you're not going to just go, okay, well, I know what to do now. I'm going to lift it up, and it will just peel your skin literally to the bone. So it's not like I'm like the secret magician spoiling the industry's tricks.
Yeah.
But they do a very close-up one there, and I was like, God, I could never be a wrestler because I would not remember to do that. I would just go, which way does it go? It goes up. No. Which way doesn't it go? And then, before you know it, you've lost a face. Awful. And they begin to bring in other people come out. So you get Kid Cash, who was, in and out. And you get Axel Rotten and Balls Mahoney. Balls Mahoney, who was a member of the Church of Satan.
Oh, he's the other one. He was the other one. C of S.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
He also claimed he was a vampire because he used to drink his wife's blood. He got very cross on a shoot interview that I was watching the other night where someone had suggested he had drank another woman's blood. And he was like, of course I didn't do that. He said, I only drink my wife's blood. He's really cross about it. Really, really sort of, how dare
you?
Ever
try the breast milk?
Yes.
All the fluids.
He passed away in 2016 of a heart attack. His wife noticed he was watching Jeopardy, and he was on the sofa, and he moved to get more comfortable. And then she noticed he was unconscious, but he'd had a massive heart attack and died.
That's where you want to go, I guess.
I mean, if only she had more blood, she could have reacted a bit more quickly, but unbelievably.
Probably all that blood he drank.
Unbelievably. That was
Why? This man's got 20 gallons of blood in him.
Do you know, he was...
So he's been eating black pudding all his life.
Pressing down on his heart.
The heart's doing twice as much work. He's not noticeably bigger. He's
all right, got more blood, have we? Right.
I'll just churn more of this fucking
I'll just move it around. Don't worry, don't worry. this is...
I live in a small flat. You can only just move things around enough before you haven't got enough room.
You're going to shit yourself with this. This is... So, Balls Mahoney, he died in 2016 and he was 44.
Right.
So, 2005, he was 33 during this. He comes... Go back.
Have a look.
Oh, you'll feel so good about yourself. And Axel Rotten comes out with him as well, another sort of a pioneering hardcore wrestler. Mm. Some of his matches, he had a Taipei taped fist glass match or whatever it was called. I forget the things, but it was... he had these gloves which had glass sort of embedded in them, and they would fight with those, and those were gruesome matches.
Jeez.
He also died in 2016, just 2 months before his tag team partner. He was found dead in a McDonald's bathroom. He had a heroin overdose.
Oh.
His heroin equipment was still laid out on the baby changing table in the toilet. His last tweet had been a few hours before his death. He was found at 3 p.m, but no one knew how long he'd been there. His last tweet was, "The way I do things may not be the way you do things, but you'll find out there is only one way, my way." Last thing he did there was a misspelling. But also, I mean, annoyingly ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gotta do things my way. Infant table, mate.
Gonna
McDonald's.
Don't use that.
Floor.
I could go up a baby's bum.
Oh, this McDonald's is being burnt down now, sir. And then out comes Steve Austin to do a big come on, let everyone come into the ring and have a good time beer bash.
I hope this is fortified. A good time beer bash, is that a thing that he'd done before? Or
well, not
was that
really.
Like a thing?
I think there was a slight thing of Austin was, you know, he always said that ECW was a very important turning point in his career. He only spent a short time there, I think two matches he had. But it was important to him, and I think what they wanted to do slightly was they wanted to say, this is still part of the WWE family.
Yes.
So Austin will come out, and remember, it's all been fun, but at the end of the day, it's WWE.
It's WWE.
And here comes Austin to say, well done, everyone. You've all played your part very well. Now, you can each have a beer. And it is a slight patronising thing. What happens is they begin splitting ECW up against the WWE. They never had a good name for it. They call it the anti-ECW Raw and SmackDown contingent.
Oh, come on. That's overbranding, if anything.
It really is. And they put them together.
Baddies and the goodies.
And they have a sort of, you know, big, messy, smorgasbordy sort of, you know, smear of a battle. And it's a bit unsure. I don't think people are quite sure what they're supposed to be doing, whether they're supposed to be throwing the WWE people out really quickly.
Yeah.
I think the WWE people are like, I'm not being thrown out quickly
because
I've got a bit of superiority.
Yeah, I'm WWE for crying out loud.
So it's a little bit awkward. But what's most important is in the background, JBL decides to bully the Blue Meanie. So
you do not bully the Blue Meanie.
This is probably one of the most famous modern shoots of all time. So
right.
Basically what seemed to have happened is the Blue Meanie had done a podcast interview where he talked about his period working in WWE in the late 90s.
Right.
And he said, I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. JBL was a horrible bully. It would have been nice if he wasn't there, but you can't have it all. And somehow, this got back to JBL. God knows when.
I'm trying to think, what, will you be listening to a podcast back then?
Well, exactly.
That's five.
I mean, God knows. I don't actually know what it was on.
I first podcasted in 2006, I believe.
Really?
Yeah. In a music-based podcast I hope nobody ever finds.
I think I did the same thing. I think I had my own one.
Oh, I think I had my own one a year earlier than yours.
No, I think I had mine 2 years earlier than yours. basically what happened is JBL in the video, you can see for some reason JBL isn't going, I'm going to be in the middle of this,
right,
or I'm going to be at the front near the hard camera. He's like, I'm going to be at the back opposite this Blue Meanie guy. And what really happens is Blue Meanie explains it, but Blue Meanie says, I felt this punch on a scar I had, a recent injury from a wrestling match. and I thought, what the hell? I turned around, and there was JBL. He started throwing shots. He did the hockey thing, pulling my shirt over my face and began throwing live rounds. He had a fistful of rings, so I was like, I'm going to take this. So I snatched a headlock as much as I could on a 6'6" man, and I started throwing punches back. We kind of got pulled apart. What happens in the thing, you can see, you can only see it sort of... It's like Zapruder footage. It's hard to make it all out. But Bradshaw goes in, and he pummels the fuck out of Blue Meanie.
Right.
And Blue Meanie split open, absolutely, you know, tremendously badly.
He's a fun character.
There is something about JBL, which is a classic bully thing, which is you look at all those men from ECW, and you go, who shall I pick on? The fat one,
fat one
in a costume with his blue hair.
Well, to be honest, he was having a go at all the fat ones. He was
he
saying
was.
That he hated fat people.
He was.
Fat us.
You see what happens is JBL absolutely thumps him horribly, horribly. And Blue Meanie, you can tell he's going, what's going on? I don't understand this. Bradshaw then carries on doing something else, and Blue Meanie is just in the corner of the ring. His head is just absolutely scarlet, and he just doesn't know what to do. And everyone starts looking at Blue Meanie like, What's happened to Meanie?
Has a Meanie got a Meanie? Got our Meanie?
And you can see Meanie sort of just saying, you know. And you can see people looking at Bradshaw, who is sort of like doing his thing. By the time Bradshaw, he's supposed to be the last person, I think, to be sort of kicked out of the ring by the ECW stars. By the time they're doing it, he looks very much like he needs to get out of the ring. He is scrabbling. And Bubba Dudley sort of pulls him out. But there are about five people and they are beginning to sort of, I think, cotton on to what's happened and attempt to wail on him.
Yeah.
There's Blue Meanie's blood all over his shirt.
Yeah.
Blue Meanie goes backstage and John Laurinaitis, the talent booker at the time, goes bananas with him, going, who told you to blade? Who told you to blade? And he was
it
like...
It would be a weird thing for the Blue Meanie to do. At the end, I'm going to fucking
absolutely. I'm going to go into business by myself. Crazy. Anyway, John Laurinaitis, he explained what had happened, and John Laurinaitis sort of said, my God, you know, that shouldn't have happened at all. So as Blue Meanie goes into the gorilla position, there's JBL, and JBL said to him, you were talking about me on the internet. And Blue Meanie said, was I wrong to say you were a bully? He said, you're having a hard time proving me wrong. Anyway, the WWE, when they heard about this, they doubled Meanie's pay. They stitched
really?
Him up on the night and they doubled his pay.
Yay!
A clear example, a clear indication. They knew there was a problem and they totally ignored it each time. JBL then went on to WWE.com talking about Meanie on the internet. And he said, before the brawl at the end of the pay-per-view, Blue Meanie started cutting a shoot promo on me, saying I'm the reason he got fired and the only reason I got to where I am was because I suck Vince McMahon's dick. I was incredulous. I thought there's no way he could really mean this. He's saying that happened in like 13. I mean, it's a lie.
So they're trying to. I was in the ring and he said it. It's like a kid.
It's like a kid. No, that didn't happen. We were in the ring, and you can watch this in the video, you'll be able to see it. We were in the ring, and Blue Meanie started cutting a shoot promo on me, saying I was sucking Vince McMahon's dick. Where is this coming from? Anyway, Blue Meanie basically got a, like Matt Hardy did, got a paid out of it, where they said, why don't we sign you to SmackDown? Come on, and you can have a match with JBL. And they did have a match, and they were working together fine. But there was a shot where, there was a little bit where Stevie Richards, who was in the Blue World Order with Blue Meanie, had to hit JBL with a chair. And you thought the chair shots to Masato Tanaka were bad. This is the single greatest chair shot in wrestling history. So he has this bit where he has to do the shot on him, and there's a lovely bit where basically Stevie Richards looks over at Bradshaw and you can see him go, oh, I probably should fuck it. And he hits him.
I imagine that kind of hit reverberated around the locker room. Everyone who hates JBL.
Absolutely.
Just absolutely, yes.
This one's for you, everyone. there was a comment on YouTube where someone said, I was actually there that night, they said, and the chair shot was as loud as the pyro. Just amazing.
Oh, what a prick, JBL.
Yeah, so that's the big thing. A lot of like exciting things came out of it. Not really to do with particularly the matches.
Yeah.
But what then comes out of it is they have 2005, they do it again, and it's a big success. And what happens is they decide to revive ECW.
Ah.
They bring it back as a WWE branded program, and it's pretty much a disaster. It's nothing like the original, and it's crap.
Yeah.
What the best thing that happens though is that Heyman, they bring him back into the fold. And they say to him, you can have another ECW pay-per-view because the last one was so good.
Mm.
And by this time, the TV show ECW is running and it's all gone a bit like big shows in ECW and Chavo Guerrero. And it's just, what is happening here? And Paul Heyman puts on in 2005, the end of 2005, December to Dismember, which is an ECW pay-per-view. And it remains to this day the lowest buy rate in WWE history.
Right.
Because they've changed with the network, they no longer use the sort of buy rate of pay-per-views.
Yeah.
So this will forever be the worst performing pay-per-view of all time.
Because it just happens to be one of the last.
Paul Heyman had no control over it, and the people that the ECW stars that were supposed to be on it, they were eliminated. So by the end, you were watching a main event between Big Show, Test and Bobby Lashley.
Just normal
it was,
WWE.
No, it was appalling. less than 24 hours after that show, the Vince McMahon called Paul Heyman in and sacked him.
Right.
It's just proper madness. And Heyman would be away for a long time. The only thing that happened in ECW really was the rise of CM Punk, who was when Paul Heyman was in charge of the new ECW, he really, really wanted Punk to be the champion. He had to fight a lot of things. But the ECW that came after this in the wake of it was a pale imitation. The clearest way of explaining how bad it was, the TV ECW, is that for 35 days in 2007, the ECW champion was Vince McMahon. so mad. One very last thing is, there's a nice thing, and this was spotted by Alan Cheapshot on Twitter, who's a really, really good wrestling Twitterer. And he was going through some old WWE magazines, and he found one from 2009. And in it, there's a letter from a guy called Dylan Miley, and he writes a letter saying about how his girlfriend broke up with him because he went to ECW One Night Stand 2005, instead of being with her for her birthday. Dylan Miley, rather, would later go on to become the WWE superstar Lars Sullivan. So, just a nice little story.
Oh, that's good.
Yes,
smashing work.
So, welcome to ECW.
I enjoyed it.
You like
more
a bit
of
more of that?
Yes, please.
Yeah, well, I think we can. It's not going to be next week.
No.
Calm yourself. We've got to get back on track.
We might need that lozenge a little later on down the run, to be honest.
Well, I think...
Can I have an under 5-hour show, please?
I think there's... we should probably celebrate in the way that we would do if we were actually in ECW. So I'm going to take a load of Quaaludes and then die. So
I'm going to fuck your wife.
Marvellous.
Oh,
marvellous stuff.
I never would mark because she was pregnant. And you can't kiss a pregnant lady, as we've learned.
You don't want to get babies.
You don't kiss a pregnant lady. Or anyone who's ever been pregnant. That's how it works.
Or anyone who could be pregnant.
Oh, Mark, I've enjoyed this immensely. Thank you very much.
That was good fun.
Down in four. Down in four. Oi, oi. We'll see you next time. Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, Pete!
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, Listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.